Greetings, this is James Gillen with As You Wish Talk Radio. We've got another great show here tonight. I want to give people a little heads up. We are having some X-Class flares and a little bit of technical difficulty, and there's a lot of other things going on where people are just going a little bonkers right now with the energy. So hang in there and try to go with the flow, and we'll get on with the show. We've got Christine Tolk, who was born in Roswell, New Mexico, but she was raised on the family ranch 65 miles east of Roswell. She's the youngest granddaughter of the legendary Sheriff George Wilcox. Her grandmother was the late Inez Wilcox. Christine never met her grandfather. Sheriff George Wilcox died in 1961. Christine was born in 1964. She would learn about the extraterrestrial crash and her grandfather's involvement when she was watching an episode of Roswell on the Unsolved Mysteries in 1989. In her search for answers, Christine would venture on her own journey to understand what really happened in 1947. In July in 1990 in Arlington, Virginia, she would have the pleasure of meeting Hans Adam II, the Prince of Liechtenstein. Hans Adam II would fund a project called Recollections of Roswell for the fund for UFO research. It's her hope that talking about one of the most compelling extraterrestrial stories ever in the United States, she may shed some light of truth on the universal experience by two extraordinary people, her grandparents. Christine has been a licensed massage therapist for 17 years. She is the owner of, looks like, Layashi Bodyworks in Phoenix, Arizona. Is it Iyashi?
Iyashi.
Iyashi, all right, Phoenix, Arizona. And, well, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Hey, you know, I also have a history concerning Roswell, New Mexico. My grandparents were involved in that case.
Oh, they had
one of the local hardware stores.
Oh,
and
how fascinating.
They sold the Swensons, I guess, who owned the ranch.
Uh-huh.
They sold them a lot of their hardware for the ranch, you know, the water tanks and things like that they needed. And they also knew the sheriff really well, I guess the main sheriff, which would be your grandfather.
That would be my grandfather. That's wonderful.
Yeah, so there's... I'll share you a little bit of what she told me, and then we can go on with what you've dug up. But, you know, she told me, my grandmother, she just died not too long ago. She was 103, actually. And she died in Carlsbad, New Mexico. But she told me that she said the responding sheriffs were very good friends of the family, and they came over for a cup of coffee, and she was talking to them about the event. And she was the school teacher there and knew everybody. She was, you know, the school teacher everybody loved and looked up to and respected. And I guess everybody shared everything with her. And she said that they couldn't even hold a cup of coffee. They were shaking after the event. It shook them up so much that they had a hard time even holding a cup of coffee. And they said that they couldn't talk about it, but they said, we're not alone, you know, in the universe here. And they told her very clearly, they said there was a crash and there were bodies there. So that was as far as they went with it. But knowing that story, and she said, these are good old boys, honest as the day is long, you know, salt to the earth boys. She goes, they don't make up stories, and they were way too shaken up by the event for this to be a non-event. So anyway, that was her story. And what I know about it, you know, from my grandparents.
Oh, I love that. That really touches me very deeply, because that is that's exactly why I want to talk about it, because it's been a long time. I haven't spoken really about this since, well, it was 1990, and then Don Schmidt, Kevin Randall, a lot of those guys would come back to Roswell. They would call and say, hey, we're going to have dinner at the Cattle Baron there. And so all the people would get together, and I would go and have dinner with Glenn Dennis, Walter Haught, you know, different people that were involved. And they talked about it nonstop. So there was a point for me, I mean, I really believed in it at that point. So I really kind of stopped talking about it. So it's fun for me to reconnect with this and to begin speaking about it again. So it depends on how, where you want me to start, how, what you want me to say. I mean, because I can tell about the experience going to Washington. I can tell my sisters. There was a point where, I guess I could share that. I have two older sisters that in 1969, my grandmother, when they were doing the lunar landing, and they both shared the story separately to me and recounted the exact same story, so this was fascinating to me, that she got up, she shut the shades, and both of them, I thought it was the funniest thing because my grandmother was impeccable, and I love what you said about that because everybody there was impeccable with their word, and so she said, I have to tell you something, and what I got such a kick out of is that they both separately told me that they thought she was going to tell them that she'd had an affair or some kind of a thing, and so they were giggling.
Yeah.
And they, you know, they, and so, but she said, I guess now that, you know, they're landing on the moon, I can finally tell you this. And she just, you know, she told them both. She said, you know, there was a crash and George went out there and you know, it was very interesting because that was, you know, they both shared that story. And again, I am the youngest of six, and the funny story, you said it in the intro, I didn't even know that any of this happened until one day I was sitting watching the TV and just so happened to see Unsolved Mysteries and saw my grandfather's picture, and I was with my sister Barbara at the time, and I yelled, Barbara, Granddaddy's on TV. I mean, what is this? And that's when she told me the story about, oh, yeah, there was, and that was interesting, too, because they were threatened. I mean, and I think that that's a really important piece because you said about them being so frightened, and they were frightened because they were threatened and told never to speak about it. So the fact that they spoke about it is really neat to me. And this is something I've never heard. So I feel like I got the most out of this interview tonight, hearing your story.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay, I'm sure you have, good. That's good.
Yeah, I'm sure you have more to say, but
did
they give you any details, like, concerning, you know, what he saw and how it affected him or anything of that nature?
You know, my sisters did not. And I, you know, I won't, I mean, I've asked them about 20 times to tell me over and over. And they just said, you know, what I know from, you know, the very specifics, because I won't say that they said that to them. You'd have to talk to them to get them to say that. But she did say there was a crash and that he had gone there and that, you know, they had been threatened. So those were the very specific things that I can repeat that I, you know, hands down, they did say. So unfortunately, I wish I had more details in that regard, but I don't. That was the stories I heard from them. And that was from my grandmother. My mother and father happened to be at the house the day that Mac Brazel brought the material in. And this was very fascinating because I asked them over and over, what do you know, what do you know? And my mom said, you know, we had, we were there because we always went in and to visit. And she said the phone was ringing off the hook. And we saw a box. They actually saw the box of material. They saw it sitting in his office because his office was off of the side of the house. And she said, yeah, we saw this box, and the phone was ringing, and he was talking to people. And we called my grandmother. We called her Big Mom. So when you hear me say Big Mom, I'm speaking about my grandmother. So she, you know, she said Big Mom told us that... that they were building calls from all over the world because there was this material that they couldn't identify and that they were going to turn it over to the Army, but that he was telling everybody. And I remember one specifically, she said, yeah, they're talking to London right now because they're so fascinated with this information. So that's the stories from my very specific families that I got out of it. So, you know, that's what I know from them. I've met, you know, when I went in 1990, I met people that's when I really was blown away. So I can tell you
and
more
what
about
did,
that.
What did they have to say? I guess you met some other people involved in the
Well,
in the
and
case.
That was the neat thing for me because when I remember, and I think it was Don Schmidt that called, and that was when Hans Adam, the Prince of Liechtenstein, gave this money to this fund for UFO research, and they called and they were basically getting any witnesses, anybody that they knew from this. They were just, you know, it was kind of like, let's just bring everybody and see what we can do. And so they invited my mother and her sister, my aunt Phyllis, and they could bring two guests. So I was the lucky one that got to go with my mother. And I remember at the time, even though I had seen that Unsolved Mysteries, I just thought, oh, this is just so ridiculous. I wanted to go see the Smithsonian. And so I thought, well, I'll go, but this is silly. So when I got there, that was when I was just glued to this place. We were in a conference room. It was a hotel, and there was a conference room where everybody was gathered. And part of what was happening, they had a hypnotherapist that was helping people regress so that they could remember things. And I think the first person that I met was Jesse Marcel Jr. And I remember mm-hmm. asking, you know, who are you? And he told me about his father, Jesse Marcel Sr., that he actually went to the site and got the material, and on his way back to by the house, and he said that they took it out and he got to hold it, and you know, and I can't remember if he said that they tried. What was interesting is he said, you know, there were these specific symbols on it that he remembers looking at, and he just said, like, you could crumple it and it would just pop back out, and he said it wasn't anything that he had ever seen on this earth. So that was the first person I saw. The person that at that place, I think, when my jaw dropped, it was, and I cannot think of her name, so I apologize, but she was Pappy Henderson's wife. And Pappy Henderson was, I believe, an Air Force pilot. And again, uh-huh. I'm trying to recount things that, you know, I've heard 20-something years ago. But I just remember the story that she said. And this is when I thought, oh, my goodness gracious. I'm sitting here with somebody who firsthand almost knew about this. She said that they were at a grocery store and they saw some kind of a magazine, and you know how they'll have like aliens, or there was some story, and I can't remember the story, but she said he looked at her and he's like, you know, if they're showing this, he's like, I guess it's been long enough. And he told her that he was the pilot that flew these bodies to Dayton, Ohio. Now that is when my ears perked up. And she was a beautiful woman. She was and Matt, you said something again that I just think, thank you for saying, because it just, these people were salt of the earth. They weren't people that would, I mean, why would they share that story? I mean, she was sharing it because she was being nice and had been invited and wanted to honor her husband. And here's all these people together. So she was one that was very fascinating to me. Glenn Dennis was another one that that was really fascinating to me. And I can't remember if it was at that conference or if it was later at the dinners that he, I think it was more the dinners back in Roswell, because I would just sit and just ask him every question I could. And he said that, he told me that he had, and I dare, I don't know how much to tell, because I'll just tell this story, because God bless Lynn Dennis. I remember him saying that he had a friend who was a nurse at the base, and that when this happened, that he went out to the base, and she came to the door, and she said, "You need to get out of here, and I'm going to share something with you that you'll always remember." And I remember him drawing on a napkin, and of course, would I keep it? No, but I wish I had a image of the aliens. And the thing that he drew that was so fascinating to me was the fingers, and there were, I believe, four fingers, and on the pads of the fingers were these little wart-like, they looked just like little warts on the you know, your fingertips. And
like almost
said,
like a suction cup or something?
Yeah, like little suction cups or like something like that. And he said, you know, and she was frightened. And to this day, like later on, you know, as you're thinking, you're like, wait a minute. This wasn't until a few, quite a number of years later, I was like, wait a minute, I think he was married. And then I thought, and this is me making this up, so I don't know this. Like, and then I thought, I wonder if he was having an affair with her. You know, I made up all that. You know, and, but there was something there, and that's neither here nor there. But that was fascinating, because he was just such a neat person. And, you know, this was just us sharing. And then he told me that, you know, they had called and asked him about, you know, little caskets and about embalming, and because he was the mortician in Roswell. That's who Glenn Dennis was. And then one other person, Walter Haught, was the person that they actually gave the article to when they apparently decided they were going to say that they'd captured a flying saucer. And he was always so sweet. He would just say, you know, all I know is that I was told to take this article to the newspaper, and that's what I did. And so that, you know, but those were the main characters. And then back in Roswell, when, again, I would be invited, Walter Haught had a gathering at his house, and so I was invited to go there, and how I got there, I actually was a school teacher in Lovington, New Mexico, so I would drive the however many miles from Lovington to Roswell. It was, I don't know, 100 miles, 80 miles, I don't know. I would drive all the way over here to see these people, and this one evening, I remember, and this would be when Don and these guys would come to town, and it was just, they were so lovely. They loved these guys. So they said, oh, they're coming to town, so let's have a gathering. So this one time that I went, a woman named Frankie Rowe was sitting there, and I remember sitting beside her, and I said to her, now, who are you? And she said, you know, my father was a fireman in Roswell, and she said he told me that he had gone to the crash site, and not only were there bodies, he saw one that was actually walking around. And I remember looking at this woman's face, and she, I mean, she was as serious. I mean, it was really hard for her even to tell the story. And I think later on the internet, you know, I see people trying to debunk these people and saying stuff, and that, you know, and that really, I have to say, I'm very irritated about the people that are doing this, because they don't know these people. And that woman, that was her father, and this, I mean, this was a firefighter. Why would you even make up a story like that? I mean, these people much rather would have been quiet. I mean, my grandparents much rather would have never been in the limelight. All these people, Walter, Glenn, any of them. I mean, they weren't doing it for fame and glory, I can tell you that. So that's the gist of kind of, I believe, the people that I've met. I can't, if there's others at this point, I can't remember. There was somebody I was trying to remember, the Shirkies or somebody like that, and I meant to look them up because I thought, I know that they were telling something too, but I can't remember who they were, but they were actually at this conference. And again, I've gotten reinterested in it again, and that's why it's fun to talk on these shows, because I'm thinking, wait a minute, who was that I met, and what did they say, and how can I bring this all together? And these were, you know, all separate people. So, and again, I love the addition that you made tonight. I'm gonna have to tell that one too. So, anyway, that's kind of the gist of it that I can say. I mean, unless. Uh-oh. Are you there? Hello?
Hello?
Oh, hello?
Yeah, I lost you there for a second. We're back on the whole.
Interesting. The energies are just so powerful right now. It's just so amazing. Isn't it great?
Yeah.
So, what did you lose? Where did you lose me?
I'm not sure, but we can just go on. You know, covering what you were talking about, you know, these people, to me, when you are, you know, salt of the earth and you are, you know, very, very serious, you know, about your word and your integrity and things like that, you know, and I see these people just coming out of the blue that had nothing to do with this whatsoever.
Right.
No, nothing about it. They don't know these people. You know, like my grandmother, they don't know my grandmother. My grandmother's word is law. And, you know, and she, she's very learned, you know, very shape, you know, very straight shooter. Actually, she was a very good shot as well. And, you know, they don't know these people and they make these statements. And to me, I find that, you know, I run against that quite a bit myself. Because, you know, I try to walk, you know, the old red road and have, you know, keep my integrity up and tell things to the best of my knowledge, you know, and keep straight on things. But, you know, I get the same thing. I get so much stuff thrown at me, and it doesn't matter if you have, I have three or four boxes of footage of UFOs, unbelievable footage, up here in our area. And
wow.
we have a long history of UFO activity in the area. It goes back to the tribal police and the Native Americans and their lore to Kenneth Arnold, you know, who coined the word flying saucers when he lost them.
Yeah.
He landed on the western slopes of Mount Adams, which is my front yard. So we have this just amazing amount of, you know, thousands of witnesses, Boeing engineers, triple PhD engineers from Lockheed, stunt work people. We have them all on the record here, you know, as saying the ships are here and they're not ours. And even with all this information, you still have the armchair investigators and the mudslingers that are just making stuff up, and they just want to hear themselves speak. And they just want to be contrary and get a name for themselves and actually get a name for themselves at your expense. You know, they try to assassinate your character. So they, you know, for their own ego aggrandizement, you might say. So I know what that's like, and you do run into that out there. But to me, I think we need to go back in time and look at the morals of some of these people and the character of some of these people. And when you get three or four of these people saying, you know, that something crashed and there were bodies and there were parts, it's pretty obvious something happened then.
There, it did. I mean, I'm convinced that's what I said. That's probably why I didn't talk about it so much anymore, because there wasn't much to talk about. I believed it. I knew it was true. And then that was that.
Yeah. Have you watched the story evolve? I mean, it went from there was a crash and there was a saucer and bodies found to it was a weather balloon to it was a German experiment with dummy or no, it was
the crash test dummies or something like that.
Yeah, it was crash test dummies. And then the latest one now is that on the inside, and the people that know what really happened there, they're saying that, well, what it was a secret German balloon with beings altered to look like aliens that were misfigured by Germans just to, for some,
oh my God.
I guess just to freak us out or something. That's the latest story I've heard that coming from inside, you know.
Well, you know, I guess it's, I mean, you know that they're, I mean, that's pretty lame. So if they can't come up with something better than that. Well, then that's the thing.
I think they filled up a weather balloon with swamp gas and then went down and put some carp in a basket and flew it over the most secure areas we had, you know, where they're working on atomic bombs just so somebody could shoot it down and say, and have a story about it. That's my theory.
Well, and, you know, I can tell you this Max Razzle, the guy that actually brought the material into my grandfather, I remember him, bless his soul. They, you know, the Army he did say, you know, if I would have known, I just would have left it laying there and that would have been the end of it.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's not, and that was a thing, too, I was thinking about. He drove, I think it was 80 miles to bring this material, and we had a ranch 65 miles east of Roswell. We had weather balloons fall on our property all the time. We wouldn't have driven 65 miles. I mean, you basically look at them and go, you know, we played with them and drug them around the pasture with our horses.
Yeah.
We did. You wouldn't take one into the sheriff. But, you know, I think, oh my God, you got to do better than that. But, yeah, I guess that's why I was trying to, just recant and just think, you know, who did I meet there? And there were two guys that I wish that I would have had more insight to take notes and write down names. These guys didn't have anything to do with the UFO crash. They were two nuclear physicists, and I started talking to them, and they were there just listening to the information, and they said some really fascinating things. They said, you would be surprised the technology that we already have, and they said that they had already been able to duplicate this material, and that was back, in 1990, and they said, one other thing that my mind still just goes around and around, they said that there was a technology where they used the gas from the neon, like the stuff that you power the neon lights with, and they said that there was a technology that they had discovered that could power the whole city of Washington, D.C., and I just kept saying, why don't you hear about this? Why? And they said, well, you'll never hear about it because there's just too many people that don't want this to get out. I mean, look at the insurance companies, the steel companies. And I just remember these two guys. And again, in hindsight, I thought, why didn't I write down those guys' names? And, I mean, back then, you didn't really have cell phones or I don't even know. I didn't have a computer. Even then, I don't think I had one until later. So there wasn't email and all of that. So I think that that's the interesting thing, that when you do create these things and you talk about, I mean, these people, I mean, you're riding in a car 80 miles. There were not roads like you had today.
Mm-hmm.
There weren't. I mean, it was 1947, so you had the atomic bomb group there that was keeping a secret. So they couldn't keep a secret about aliens? Of course they could. So, I don't know, it's really fascinating to me, and I think part of why I get on these radio shows is I've learned more lately because, just like you said, I didn't even know some of these stories that they're putting out were out. So anyway, any way I can shed some light, just give some credibility, and just let people know that these are lovely people, and being threatened and your family's threatened and told that you can't speak about something and living with that secret, my belief, James, and it's my belief, is that my father, my grandfather, he was never the same, and he died of what they called hardening of the arteries, and I swear it was because, and my grandmother said, you know, he was never the same after that. She did tell that to my sister. She said, you know, I think that this killed Granddaddy. She said, he was never the same after that.
Oh, yeah. I imagine it would be quite a shock. The I know from some inside knowledge, I asked some people that were involved on the inside with that situation and trying to figure out why those ships crashed into each other. Actually, there's two ships that seemed to crash.
See, I would love to know more about that. I mean, I keep hearing that there were two crash sites. See, I don't know because I haven't read the books. I didn't really keep up, and I apologize. I just didn't, and probably better because I'm a little more credible because I don't know the stories. I just am trying. So tell me, I would love to hear more. Please.
What they said was that because of, you know, the nuclear bombs facilities and the other things they're working on there, you know, that whole area there, they put in some pretty heavy duty radar. I guess three separate systems in there that were pretty massive. And, you know, the old story, I guess they crossed the beams and by accident, they didn't do it on purpose, but they found out by accident, they actually, threw off, I guess, the guidance systems of these ships and they ended up running into each other. And
wow.
That was the situation. But I also, received some pictures of the, metal, you know, that surface with the, it looked like a type of a cuneiform written on these, on the metal. And I had a guy here who was from Korea. And he studied cuneiform and a lot of the ancient writings, and he looked at it and he actually deciphered that beam, what it said on the beam. And what came off of that was the king, it said something like the king of kings, oh no, the king of light is coming, like the king of kings and some other things, and he broke parts of it, and you could just get these parts
of
sayings, but it was all about talked about kings and light and the king of light and things of that nature. So he said, yeah, I can read most of this, but he said this is very, very ancient and they're still using some of these symbols, but the other ones he couldn't. He said, I haven't seen this one. But he said, this symbol means king, this is light, this is this,
wow.
This is that. And, yeah, it was amazing, you know, that, you know, so I'm sure that they've probably deciphered, you know, whatever is written on this, on the material, and whatever numbers were on there, and parts lists or whatever, I don't know, but whatever is on the beams and the other things. But, you know, I think of Colonel Corso's, I think it was he general or colonel? I think it was Colonel Corso. His book, Day After Roswell, just spelled this whole thing out, how they've been back engineering this technology and they got microwave, fiber optics, something else. I guess the chip itself, the computer chip from, back engineering, you know, the crash at Roswell. And you look at what happened. I mean, we were going around in some pretty funky old cars back then. There wasn't much technology, and the next thing you know it, we're going to the moon, you know.
That's what my grandmother was saying. Exactly. It is fascinating. It's just, it feels kind of funny even sharing because I think, you know, really what I'm sharing is I mean, it's what some people said, but I do think, again, it just leaves a little bit of credibility. And if I can do anything to just support and just, I don't know, I feel compelled because of my grandparents just to really support this and move it forward, whatever that looks like. So even
I think that's the same reason I've gotten involved in. I don't really look in the past so much. I more look at what's happening now. And I mean, we have massive motherships flying over the ranch here on a regular basis, you know, treetop level, getting it on film, you know, so.
That's amazing. So, let's see, I think it was 2007, well, because we're in Phoenix, and I didn't see the original Phoenix lights, but it was, I guess, anyway, 2007, one of my friends, I was staying with her, and she called me and she said, you've got to go outside. And so where we were living, it was, you could go out and see like over the top of what's called South Mountain. And there were these big orbs. There were five big orbs and they were huge and they were exactly perfectly lined up and they were just hanging there. They were basically just right there. It was so fun because she got home and we're jumping up and down in the driveway saying, oh my God, do you realize what we're seeing? I mean, our lives are changed. And and this one orb, it was so neat because it started just kind of flying through the others in and out. And it was like it was just playing. It was like it was little play going on. And of course, I thought, well, I'm going to call the news. And so I start calling the news and telling them, I'm sure you're getting 1,000 calls, but there's some UFOs here. And I remember saying, you know, my name, I didn't tell them. I said, my name is Marie London. I gave them her name. And I thought, oh, they'll never call back because there's got to be so many people that saw this. And the next day they called her and said they wanted her to talk about her experience. And so the two of us got on the TV and we talked. And it was so amazing because they, you know, of course, like anything, they said, you know, that it was flares. And I have a client that packed flares for the National Guard. And she said, there is no way. She said, number one, you can't even get them to line up. She's like, first of all, they would be falling from the sky, not directly lined up. And she said, secondly, you can't. The chances of two of them lining up for 2 seconds. But and that was just to this day. I thought I was so excited because I always thought I so want to see something. And my father had told me because I kept asking him because we lived, you know, so far out in the middle of nowhere. And I said, you have to have seen a UFO. You have to. And he said, you know, there was one time, and he said, I was going to feed the horses, and this orb, and he described it just kind of like the orbs we saw. So there was this golden orb, and he said it just came down, and it just hovered, and it was like it was just looking at me. And he said, I remember looking at it, and he said, I wasn't afraid. He said, but I realized I was seeing something that, you know, I had never seen before. And he said, it was the funniest thing. He said, it just kind of danced around, and then it just zipped off. And he said, and my father was a guy that was, he was in World War II, and you could barely even get him to talk about anything. But I just bugged him and bugged him because I said, I know you've seen something. I know you have. And that was the thing, because I kept thinking, I know that these people know more. And had I had the chance to talk to my grandmother, I would have asked 10 million questions. And that's what I kept saying to my sisters. I said, why didn't you just ask a million questions? And my sisters both said the same thing. They said, you know, we just didn't even know what we were hearing. They were expecting her to tell the affair story. So from there, you know, the UFO, they're kind of like, oh. But
that's it.
Anyway, there's so many things. And my friend, I have a friend here in Phoenix. She and I did a conference, Virginia Cervantes. We did Embracing Contact. She's here with me, so I need to ask her what it was. And we did, well, because we were talking, and this is actually how this surfaced, James, because I said, you know, I am so tired of people trying to be convinced about this. I said, I wish we could just get beyond that. And so we did a whole conference on embracing contact and basically just saying, you know, we already believe. We don't need to be convinced. You know, don't need you to dig up some material. And so we did a conference and had guest speakers and had people that were actually talking about, you know, the more advanced things and just given that, okay, yeah, we get it. We don't have to be convinced. So, you know, where do we go from here? So that's why I like who you are and what you're doing. So I'm happy to be a part of your show.
Oh, thanks. You know, we've had a lineup here. We put on conferences up here at the ranch, and I actually built a conference building to do that. And we've had, you know, Mary Rodwell here, Dolores Cannon. You know, I can go on and on. Everybody, Bob Dean, you know, that one of the old timers in the ufology. Was here. Wendell Stevens was here. You know, the list just goes on and on. Brooks Agnew. You know, I can go on and on with the list. Neil Kramer's here too. He comes out and sky watches with us all the time.
See, I just think that's so fun. I mean, you're doing it. You are doing it, and I honor that and appreciate it. And so it's fun for me to get to be a part of it. And and like I said, I mean, I really know such a minute speck, but it's fun just to be a part of it.
You know what's funny, though, is that, you know, with all of these people that have been up here, I mean, Nick Bajic, he ran for, I think, Senator of Colorado. I mean, Alaska. You know, all of these people have been up here, and, you know, the scientists, everything we have. And believe it or not, I'm shut out of the UFO community because, you know, the major UFO groups have just pretty much thrown a big censorship flag on it because we don't give a dark message here. You know, we tell people it's not a negative thing. You know, there are low-level contacts, but what about the benevolent contacts and the ancient history of contact and the spiritual side of contact, which is extremely well documented throughout history. And because of that, because we don't say they're coming here to eat us and turn us into human pilaf you know, and things like that, because of that, we've been kind of cut out of the loop or the nuts and bolts factor. We go far beyond, you know, nuts and bolts. But, I mean, we had Paranormal State here. We told them exactly when and where the ships would come. And they came and they filmed them and they even said on the air, look, they did say at 10 o'clock in the east that some ships would appear. Have your camera ready. And they showed up. And I told them actually northeast. I told them, you know, it would be more northeast. And so have their cameras pointed right in this one area. And these ships came in. They powered up, just lit up the sky, dropped down and went over the treetops and around the mountain, you know, which is not a satellite. And these things have landed on the mountain, and they've morphed into three or four ships, back to one again, taken off. We have it all on film. And we give this to the OMSI Planetarian, you know, the head of that and some of these other people. And they go, oh, that's the space shuttle.
Yeah. You know? I mean, isn't it, you know, but that's just, it's okay. You just got to keep it on.
Well, I mean, it's actually funny.
You know the truth. It's, that's the thing.
It's so ridiculous. It's funny when you have, I mean, we had Fox News out here, ABC, everybody's been out here. But it's at the point now when these guys say things, you look at them, you just go, are you like, is there something wrong? Are you brain damaged or something? Or what's wrong here? Because you're just shown something phenomenal.
Yeah.
And you've tried to put it in a box that a 9-year-old would never put in.
Right.
You know, so it's just amazing.
I mean, people are afraid you know, they don't know what to do with it. So, you know, if I can't figure this out, and what do I do about it? So I'm going to pretend like I didn't really see that.
Yeah, exactly.
I love it. And, you know, I apologize. I looked on your website, and where's your ranch?
It's at the base of Mount Adams in Trout Lake, Washington.
Oh, wow. Gorgeous.
Yeah, and it's out pretty much, you know, we're the last little town, and then it goes wilderness, and then the reservation, the Yakima Reservation is there, and they just have a long, long history of activity. And, you know, you go up there and talk to them about it, and they just smile and chuckle, and they go, yeah, and they thank me. They go, hey, thanks for getting this out, because nobody will take them seriously. They go, oh, those are just a bunch of drunk Indians up there. And, you know, they make comments like that. And I just said, you know, I told them, I said, you know, you have no idea what they know. You know, if you go up there with that attitude, I said, they won't even talk to you. They're not going to share anything with you.
Why would they? Why would they?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, if you're not going to be respectful, you know, it's like, you know, respect their ways. I mean, their ways are working a lot better than our ways, you know.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, anyway, that's pretty much what I have to share. I mean, it's. I appreciate your time. I love getting to be a part of, like I said, the fact that consciousness. So, anyway, I don't. You know, that's my friend Virginia talked me into to doing this. So I said, absolutely, I will, because I want to honor everybody. So
yeah,
but you know,
is that your friend that's there with you?
Yes, she is.
I think you should put her on the spot and put her on the air.
She is. She's right here. Virginia, you need to say something. She's on the phone. Now it's her turn.
Hi, James. Hey,
Virginia. Hi, how you doing?
Nice to meet you.
Oh, you too. It sounds like you've had a lot of experiences as well.
You know, actually, I have. Christine just put me on the spot. you know, what's interesting is that Christine and I have known each other for 4 or 5 years. And, from the first moment I met her, I could feel energy around her. And she is a masseuse, and she's fantastic. And the second time I went to have a massage by her, I said to her, there are 3 beings that just walked in here. And she goes, do you see them? I said, I feel their energy. And she goes, well, I work with 3 beautiful Pleiadian beings when I do my massages.
Uh-huh.
So that's how her and I connected right away. It was like, I'd only known her, you know, this was my second visit. I just kind of blurted it out. There are 3 beings that just walked in here. And she acknowledged it. And I thought, wow. And, but as a child, my mother understood frequency signatures. She could feel, see, and hear energy. And my father spoke of intelligent life in the stars. Mm-hmm. So I grew up with this from the time I was very young.
Right. You know, I've gone to Mexico. I went down to Mexico and I showed, you know, a lot of the UFO footage is down there. And then I had also pictures of actually Mary, who has appeared here at the ranch, and some of the other beings and some of the feline beings that have been appearing here. And just incredible things. Kuan Yin's actually, we have photographs of them actually appearing here.
We love Kuan Yin.
Yeah, and they were all excited about that. They go, yeah, they like the orbs and, you know, all the paranormal stuff. And you know, I'd show them the UFOs and they go, yeah, you know. You know, that's part of our culture.
Well, growing up in a Mexican heritage, you know, the natives spoke of this energy. And and they're very familiar with this energy. And I think one of the largest, if I don't think it's the highest, but one of the largest pyramids is in Mexico.
Oh, yeah.
And I believe it has a Venusian contact. But I wanted also to thank you for giving Christine the opportunity to speak and me coming on and saying a couple words because, you know, when you've grown up with this all your life, it's a natural state. And you start to realize there are more people out there in the world that know about extraterrestrial energy, universal energy, but yet haven't been able to talk about it, you know, very, like locally, talk about it naturally. And so the more we talk about it, the more we see that we truly are connected as a universal or a family throughout different universes. And that gives us the opportunity to get along together, to work with each other. You know what I mean?
Oh, I agree 100%. You know, we need to stop, you know, get the giggle factor out of this and looking at people like they're crazy because,
yeah,
you know, the people that are doing that are just, it's pretty much an open display of ignorance because they haven't done any research in the field. And if you go to all the ancient temples and you ask them who built these temples, who moved these monolithic stones, you know, yeah, they point to the sky and they go, the gods, you know, the sky beings, the star nations, you know, they have different names for them, but it's all over, in Europe, it's all over church frescoes. I have tons of frescoes with UFOs in them. It's always been a part of our culture, but the past 60 years, it's been censored out and giggled out and everything else because, and I think that was a major effort to cover up the fact that we've been back engineering, you know, these things since the '30s and '40s.
Yeah, absolutely. We just, it's Christine again. We just got back from Europe, and that was something that I really noticed over there was, I mean, there was a lot more openness about it. I mean, it just, it's very interesting. We went to the Louvre and went to the Egyptian exhibit. And you see that. I mean, you see it in the all the Egyptian hieroglyphics and I don't know. It's just very fascinating. We definitely and I think that what Virginia said that is so wonderful is shows like yours, people like us talking, finally give people a chance to say, "Hey, I believe like that, and I want to talk about that." And I saw that, or I know that. So, anyway.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, I'll tell you an event we had just happened here on my birthday, which was July 22nd. We had a massive ship fly right over our heads, and it's on there. If you go to ESETI birthday power-up on YouTube, it's all over there. And then there's another massive power-up on there that we filmed the next day. And then the day after that, both cameras, one camera was broken, so it was getting fixed, and the other one was downloading the material from the night before, and these four ships came in. It looked like a triangle with one trailing, and as they came in, all of a sudden they stopped, and they all lined straight up and down, just like what you saw, and they looked they looked like arc welding lights. I mean, they were so bright.
Yeah.
And kind of a reddish tint to them, or a pinkish reddish tint to them, and they hovered for about 10 minutes over the Baptist Church here and the Jonah Ministries, which is this big retreat Baptist retreat center. And you know, the locals saw it. A lot of people saw it. We saw it. We got photographs of it, but we didn't get any footage because the cameras were down. But what was amazing is not one of them has said a peep about it. And they had a huge camp over at the Jonah Ministries. And their whole lawn area was full of tents and people out there. I mean, it was right over their heads. There's no way
they could
miss it. And, you know, and we are not one of them has picked up the phone or come by and said, "Hey, I can't believe what just happened."
You saw that.
Or even asked a question about it, you know.
Wow.
It's amazing that they're so afraid of losing faith, you know, within their religion or within the community. But a lot of the local people that were there, they go, "Yeah," they're all excited, and they came up to me and talked to me about it. You know, the guy that works at the gas station saw it, and a couple, one of the forest rangers, he saw it, and some of his friends saw it, and they're all excited about it. But that was it. You know, I haven't heard anybody come from the Baptist Church or John Ministries and say, "Hey, you know, we're kind of curious what these arc welding lights were doing, hovering straight, you know, right over our church, you know, over our retreat center here." You know, So, you know, it goes without question, you know, what you're saying is that it is really good to start speaking about this and realize, you know, you're not going to go to hell by talking about UFOs.
No.
And it's not the devil. And,
no.
You know, and we're not alone in the universe either.
And James, if you don't mind me saying, one
oh,
of the
sure.
things that Christine and I have really connected with is we both so know we're connected from, you know, like sisters, you know, but universal sisters. But we both believe in the multidimensional aspect of ourselves, that we truly are in control. And the more we work through that, the more we can actually have a wonderful experience on this planet right now. And it takes time because we say we forgot who we are. And maybe that was how we decided we'd come back on Earth and little by little work with each other. But we really are multidimensional beings. We are star beings. We are connected. We all have lineages, you know, ancient lineages from other galaxies, you know. And but it's really we're one big family. And I think that's what it's all about being back on Earth right now, just remembering, or Mother Gaia, if you would like to say Gaia. It's about remembering we're one big family.
Exactly. I mean, we do a lot of process-oriented therapy here, and we take people through past lives and birth trauma and age one and pull the major blocks and patterns and access them. And a lot of times when we go into the past life stuff, we find out that a lot of souls incarnated from the Pleiades and Sirius.
Oh, absolutely.
From these other connections. And when that door opens, boy, the emotional response is not, it's nothing to be faked. People just have this huge heart opening and remembering, and usually brings tears, and they just have a major breakthrough and an opening. And, you know, and it's sad that a lot of people run around thinking they're just a personality and a body when they are a multidimensional being existing on a vibrational continuum all the way back to the source.
Absolutely. I mean, that's really what this is about, and I think that's what started this whole conversation that even had me tell Virginia, oh, by the way, my grandfather was the sheriff of Roswell. But that was kind of an aside.
Because
we were just talking about, you know, really, just what is it going to take? And I think that's what you're saying. And it is sad, and I guess I would just say to anybody that's listening out there, I grew up in the Baptist church, and you know, it really is not separation. It all is the same. I mean, we're all one, and it all can go together. It doesn't, you know, if you're religious, you know, there can be UFOs too. As a matter of fact, it was a very interesting thing today. I did this, it was called Moving Planet. There's a man named Bill McKibben who does a lot with climate change and, you know, global awareness and that kind of thing. And that was the other thing that people are having a hard time even accepting, that there's global warming. And I'm thinking, oh, my God, really? I mean, I found out today, not to start a whole new subject, but just to bring awareness, that two-thirds of the Arizona legislature does not even believe in global warming. And I'm thinking, okay, so that's kind of what we're dealing with right here.
He was starting to buy them all a thermometer or something.
I'm like, oh, my God. Well, could you call it climate change or something? Would that help you? Because that's what I guess I'm saying here, at least where you are in Washington. I swear there's more consciousness. But and we're here. I know that I've been placed in Arizona, and we marched with about 100 people at least. And I thought, well, at least there was 100 people in Phoenix and what was neat, it was an interfaith walk. So we actually went to the Catholic church, to a Muslim church, so it was really neat. My boyfriend found it, and I was like, how did you find this? But so that was, so I want to just kind of end on that note, because I want to say it's just like cracking the egg. You've got to just got to know that it isn't, they're not separate. You can believe in God and believe in alien beings, too. We're all one.
Not the devil? It's not the devil driving those ships?
You know, James, I don't believe in the devil, so I don't know. We could go down that road, too, so I don't know.
All right. I just,
you know what I mean?
I'm
one of those kind of people.
Yeah. No, I have my grandmother and was Cherokee. And so, you know, the ancient stories about the Cherokee Nation, they talk about their ancestors as coming from the Pleiades. And if you go to Hawaii and talk to the kahunas, they point at the Pleiades. And they said, that, those are ancestors. That's where we came from. Yeah. And if you, you know, no matter where you go, it's they all point at some star system and say this is where their ancestors came from. And even in over in Indonesia, same thing. They have stories of the Pleiades. And in the Bible, Amos and Job talk about the sweet energies of the Pleiades. So
they do.
Yeah, it's all throughout our culture. And I'll tell you what the information I've been getting, because I've had contact ever since I was a kid. But they've told me very clearly that basically the Palladians are returning. Our ancestors are returning. And they talked about the earth was an Eden. It was, you know, set up so people could evolve to their highest potential. And they brought all this diversity of genetics here, human, plant, animal, everything. It's a giant cosmic zoo here, and it needs to be cherished. And they said it got hijacked over time by some lesser souls and lesser evolved beings. And now it's time to set it straight, to set it on track again. And that, and we're in the middle of that process. So there's a huge cleanup going on right now. And the higher dimensional beings are highly, very much involved with that as well as the Earth crew down here. And it, probably I would say in the next couple months, we're going to be seeing some amazing things happening in the heavens.
Oh, I'm excited. I'm ready. I'm there, so absolutely.
Yeah, you get somebody that doesn't believe, just say, hey, come here, walk outside.
Just go just look at that. Here it is. Well, yeah. And I think that's it. It's just, it's not about believing, it's about remembering, James. And I think that what you said, and that's kind of the key for me that I've learned from all of this, it's just remembering. And you said that, you know, when you remember who you are and you're like, oh, and like you said, that heart opening, then it's then it all makes sense. If the things that didn't make sense do make sense. And so that's beautiful.
Yeah, it is all about knowing yourself. That's the old biblical stuff. They say, know thyself, you know, be still and know ye are God. You know, it's like, it's very clear in what they're talking about, not a God over others, you know, that puts others in servitude. It's, you know, connecting with the one consciousness that encompasses all consciousness on all planes and dimensions throughout the multiverse. And that spark is within everybody that can ignite to the full flame. But we have to transcend all the cultural and religious beliefs that separate us, you know, from that unity consciousness.
Absolutely. So anyway, and I apologize, but I have another appointment at 9:30. So
no problem. I mean, we went a little over, and luckily
thank you so much. I've enjoyed listening to you probably more than that. So it's been my pleasure completely. Thank you so much.
Sounds like a road trip is in order. You guys have to
I'm thinking so. I think that we know exactly where we need to come.
All right.
Thanks, James.
All right, well,
it's been a pleasure.
Hey, thanks for coming on the show, and give your friend a big hug there. And it looks like we'll be signing off.
She's on too, so she can say goodbye.
Yes, thank you, James. Thank you so much.
Big hugs. Take care.
All right. Thanks for coming on the show.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
All right, looks like we're signing off. We went a little over because we started a little late. But anyway, have a great evening. This is James Gillen with As You Wish Talk Radio, signing off. Have a good evening. Good night.